Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. Today's conversation explores creativity, storytelling, reinvention, and the courage it takes to begin a completely new chapter in life. Many people dream of writing a book. Some talk about it for years. Others convince themselves they have left it too late. Yet some of the most inspiring stories come from those who decide that age, circumstance, or previous careers do not define what is possible. Stories have always helped us make sense of the world. They entertain us, inspire us, offer escape, and sometimes help us navigate our own challenges through the journeys of fictional characters. Today's guest knows that journey all too well. Lindsay Day is an author whose path has included working as a celebrant, coach, and guide, helping people navigate life's important transitions and move towards the best version of themselves, including myself, as she guided me through my journey as an author. And today she is best known for her Gretna Green fantasy series, blending magic, humor, mystery, and personal transformation in ways that have resonated deeply with readers around the world. Lindsay, it's such a pleasure to have you with us today.
It's an absolute pleasure to be with you, Belinda. It really is.
Thank you. Now, Lindsay, if someone had told you about 20 years ago that you would become a published author, would you have believed them? I mean, Gretna Green, as far as I know, has even reached number one bestseller.
It has, yes. The strange thing is I would have believed them, but not for the reason you might think, and certainly not with this series. I was a journalist for some years, and in my 50s, I saw a lot of women struggling with things in their own lives in their 30s, 40s and 50s. And I wondered if one day I might write a sort of coaching or self-help book to help not just women, but people to choose what they wanted and realise they probably could achieve it. But when I actually reached my 60s, it's amazing how much more clearly we can see with hindsight than we do when we're stuck in the middle of a situation. And when I did start to write, it turned out that I thought perhaps fiction might be a better way to suggest ways that real people could improve their lives by watching characters struggle with their own challenges. So I would have believed you, but I would never have believed what's happened with this particular series, because that wasn't planned at all.
That's really interesting, Lindsay. I think many people reach a point in life where hindsight brings a different kind of wisdom. And it sounds as though your experiences gave you a deeper understanding of the challenges people face. And I love that you're helping them in some way. And I am fascinated that you chose fiction as the vehicle for those messages rather than traditional self-help, because stories often reach people in ways advice alone cannot. And I think it's wonderful. So what I know that we spoke briefly about you turning to fiction, but what first inspired you to start writing fiction? What was the aha moment for you?
It was during the lockdown for COVID, actually. I'd taken early retirement because I was marrying people in Gretna Green, and we couldn't do that, of course, during COVID with all the distancing regulations. So my little puppy and I were wandering about the back roads, trying to stay sane. And there were so many times that I would be, as you do when you know, if you are a dog owner, you chat to your dog to keep them calm, because her world had changed too. You know, people weren't stopping and loving on her the way they normally did. I think she thought she'd been a bad girl and everybody was avoiding her.
Wow.
So we would chat on our walks, and it often felt as though somebody imaginary had interrupted our walk. There'd be somebody fictitious, in my own mind, obviously. We were all a little crazy during lockdown. There'd be somebody stood in the lane, Scottish little tiny lanes, and I would interrogate them, I think, sometimes quite rudely. Who are you? What do you want? What are you pretending not to want in your life? But that seems to be what you keep getting. And I think often with this imagination, the key question would be when I asked an imaginary character, what's broken in your world today and why? And I think when the answer to that was mind-blowing in the right way, I found a character I wanted to write about. And that was the beginnings of the character. I think the actual setting, because you mentioned a sense of place, that the setting was pretty much a given because, Gretna Green. I lived there for 20 years. All of my imaginary meetings with future characters happened within a few miles of my home. So I think Gretna Green has been a boundary or a border for hundreds of years. And I think I thought it would be interesting if there was another kind of border there, a fantasy border, where we could maybe move into different worlds.
That's such a wonderful story, Lindsay. I love the idea that you shared about your characters almost introduce themselves to you during those walks. It sounds as though a very challenging period unexpectedly became a creative one, which is wonderful. And it really stands out. And what really stands out for me, I should say, is the question, what's broken in your world today and why? Because it gets straight to the heart of what makes a character relatable. And we need that in fiction. We need characters that are relatable. So why did you decide to begin writing novels later in life? I know you had your other previous careers, but and you shared about lockdown and it's almost by accident, but why continue with novels, not just stop at one?
Honestly, that's a story I try to be polite about. But I've been a voracious reader, a really, truly voracious reader my whole life. Hundreds of books a year between audio and e-books, hundreds. During lockdown, I had far too much time to read, and I found that I had reached the dross in the Kindle Unlimited selection of Amazon because I'm a great fan of it and a huge subscriber to it. But everything that I was starting, I was getting 5 or 10% into it, and I didn't care. I'm sure that sounds awful, but for me, I don't really care what the story is if I don't like the characters, It's just a very personal thing. So I got a bit frustrated with it, and then one particular day, I thought, sod it, I bet I could do better. So I decided to try. I didn't actually intend to publish the first book. It was one of those, we'll do whatever we need to do to stay sane during a difficult time in our own life. But then I asked some friends, a couple of fellow authors, they were friends of mine, but happened to be authors. Then my editor submitted my book without my knowledge, which was actually a bit naughty. Not the editor I have now, interestingly, but the editor I was using at the time submitted my book without asking me to a competition, and they offered me a publishing contract.
That's amazing.
And it was, and yet I'm a control freak, Belinda. I wouldn't do well as a traditionally published author. I don't do well when people tell me how to do things that I had a different plan to do them a different way. So, although I won this competition, or I won a publishing contract through it, I don't know if it was the actual winner, obviously, because I withdrew my book. I didn't want to do it that way because they were saying, oh, this would be lovely if it was a bit less strange. And book one, interestingly, isn't very strange at all. It's designed so that if somebody wants to read a book, that book has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and they don't have to go on and read the rest of the series. I mean, about three quarters of people do, but they don't have to. It's a story complete in itself. And I thought it was the least strange of the 10 books I had planned. So I thought if a publisher thought that one was strange, we were really going to have some heated discussions if I went with them and they had the same opinion about the books that did get slightly stranger. So I decided maybe I won't do anything with it, but it kept niggling away at the back of my head, saying, well, you know, they thought it was good enough. Why don't you just publish it? At least you'll always be able to say, you know, in your dotage, you'll be able to look back from 85 and say, I published a book once. And maybe that'd be a good thing to come out of the whole lockdown scenario. So I did. I just passed it by a different editor who I love and is still with me. And we put it on Amazon. And yeah, it surprised me. I think that's the best way to phrase it.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. It's done so well. And it's such a fascinating book as well. And thank you for sharing that. Lindsay, what I love about that story is that it wasn't driven by a grand plan. Your personal story, it wasn't that grand plan that we hear about so often to become an author. It sounds as though it came from curiosity and that natural creativity that's within you and a willingness to take a chance on yourself, which is wonderful. And I also think many listeners will relate to the idea that sometimes the things we do simply because we enjoy them end up opening doors we never expected. So that's such a wonderful story about becoming a novelist. And so, I mean, going back to what you shared earlier, or what I shared really about you being a coach and you shared about being a celebrant to becoming an author, what was the biggest challenge for you to transition?
I know it probably sounds terribly simplistic, but there wasn't one. Being a celebrant was lovely, but I hadn't done it my whole life or anything. I was actually an assistant registrar in Gretna Green. Oh. So I married people. It was great.
Yes.
But I had retired because of, you know, the lockdown and stuff. I just retired a couple of years early. So all it really did was bring my life forward a couple of years. I don't know that there was... I think there were two completely different things. I think probably when I started writing, I accessed the earlier part of my career when I was a journalist. I don't think the switch. I think the challenge came later. The challenge came when it wasn't something I was doing to keep myself busy. It was something I was thinking, gosh, I put this out in the world expecting no one to read it. And now quite a lot of people have read it and they want another one. That was quite a challenge.
And that's beautiful, because was that the inspiration behind the series then? With people's demanding to read more?
Oh, yes, they were. I did have 10 books planned out before I even put a single word down. The first line of the first book is, I really want a glass of wine. And I always knew that would be the first line. It'll be the last line of the series as well, but that's just an inside joke. But I knew that I needed to write a good book, in my very personal opinion. You need to know a lot of things that you never bother to tell readers in that book. You know, it's like when people do a lot of research and then they dump all their research in their books, it often makes for quite a boring book. So to write one book, I wanted a plan for 10. So I did that originally.
And that's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that, Lindsay, and sharing with such passion. I love the stories that you've shared so far about your personal experiences. So interesting. And what I love is the preparation went into the world before readers ever saw the first page. And I think that's wonderful as well. So we're going to pause for a short commercial break now. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and today I'm joined by the fabulous author Lindsay Day as we explore creativity, storytelling, and the courage to pursue a dream later in life. Welcome back, Lindsay.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Now, what is it about fantasy and magical storytelling that appeals to you as a writer?
Oh, now that is a very interesting question. I think that possibly when somebody is struggling a little in the real world, I think that fantasy can be a way to, if you like, receive a message that the universe has been trying to send them, perhaps for a decade. But because it's not in our world, because it's fictional, I think it can hit home a very different way. For example, my books have a fake, if you like, fictional self-help books, just little snippets, a paragraph or two, that are the heading for each part of the book. One of them, for example, is about mating advice for dragons, safe mating advice for dragons, in fact. But really, it's not at all. Really, it's about not allowing other people to judge you or your dreams. And not being scared to claim who you would have liked to be in life if things had gone differently. So I think that's the great joy of fiction. I think it frees our subconscious to see possibilities where perhaps non-fiction doesn't. And fantasy is just fiction on steroids, isn't it?
And that's a really beautiful insight, Lindsay. I love that. And I think stories have a unique ability to bypass our defences and help us see ourselves differently. And what you've described sounds like much more than fantasy, really. It sounds like an invitation for readers to reflect on who they are and who they might still become. So I love that. Thank you.
And I don't think they even do it consciously, interestingly, because people often, I mean, I get a tremendous amount of reader email, but it often comes when they're, my books are quite complex. So people do a second or even a third. I mean, I think one lady's famously on her 21st reread of the series, but a lot of people do a second or third reread and they notice things they didn't notice the first time they read one of the books. And that's when they tend to email me and say, I've realized I've been thinking about this for 6 months or 2 years since I first read it. And actually, I've had this, you know, breakthrough or this enlightenment in my own life or this idea. I think that it can creep up on you. And I think if you find it too much in the story, that's probably bad writing. But when you think about it afterwards, or even when you don't really consciously think about it afterwards, I think it can creep up on people.
And that's fascinating. So, Lindsay, why do you think readers connect so strongly with stories about transformation and magic and those second chances, even if they have to reread the book or series?
I think many of us, I won't say we all, but many of us want our life to be slightly different from how it is. Some people would like it to be dramatically different, but I think readers don't really connect to that. They connect to a character. And when a character seems to be in a position that is in some way similar, but dramatically different to theirs, I think they learn something about themselves from a character's fictional solution to a problem.
That's interesting. And I think what's really interesting is that we often recognize parts of ourselves in other people's stories, yes, and even when the circumstances are completely different. But perhaps that's why fiction can be so powerful, I think. Those emotions are triggered and it allows us to explore the possibilities, those solutions and choices, and the idea of personal growth. If the character gets through something, we have the ability to get through it as well. And the safety of someone else's journey, because they make it through the end, and that's always reassuring. So do your characters ever surprise you or take the story somewhere you were not expecting?
All the time. All the time. You can have a 10-book outline, you can have all the plans you like, but then, you know, you take a young woman who is about to become the queen of a fictional realm, and she's never separated from her favourite accessory, which happens to be a big-ass sword. Mm. Suddenly, that young woman, who we know obviously is a bit of a warrior, hits a situation that perhaps is to do with her family, her mother or her brother. And she's got her own opinions that perhaps don't fit where I thought we were going with the story. But that particular character, her name is Caitlin. Oh my goodness, that is a woman with opinions. And you know, we can't take on young women with opinions. We have to let them work stuff out for themselves. But can I usually get them back to where I want them? Yes, but sometimes they take fascinating diversions on the road.
And that's interesting. And not to give too much away, but how much of yourself finds its way into your books and into, say, the lead character, the main character?
Funnily enough, very little. The lead character is a lady called Nikki, who's had an awful life. I wouldn't have stood for any of that. Mm. About the only thing I probably share with Nikki is an inability to choose clothes in shops and a love of red wine. Other than that, not a lot. She's very much herself. She really still is that desperate woman that introduced herself to me on the road one day. But some of the other characters, oh my goodness, yes. One of them has my snarky sense of humour. Another one has very little time for people who aren't being honest with themselves. And I think all of my characters have tiny pieces of me, if you know what I mean. But yes. Certainly when people meet me, they're like, oh, you're nothing like Nikki. It's like, no. I mean, yeah. I might be somewhat like where she hopefully ends up, but I'm definitely not like she is in the first few books, you know?
I think it's really interesting, Lindsay, because I think readers often assume a character is a direct reflection of the author, which is sometimes the case. And what I'm hearing is that it's more like each character carries a small piece of you rather than being you, and I think that's wonderful, and perhaps that's what makes them feel so authentic, and they each represent different perspectives, strengths, flaws, and ways of seeing the world, which is wonderful as well.
And I think so. I have a lot of male characters as well. And obviously they can't be me. They need to be themselves. But I do have this really strong belief that if the characters don't feel real, when you close a book, if you don't feel like you could walk into a coffee shop and bump into those people, then they're not properly developed. They're not fully, you know, they're not real. I need my characters to be real people with their flaws as well as their strengths. That's important to me as a writer.
And I think that's really important as well. And what do you think readers are really looking for when they lose themselves in a good story?
Escape is probably what readers will say. But interestingly, when people write to me, often they tell me that my books are a very safe place for them. I get a lot of email from people with health challenges, from the obvious, you know, undergoing chemo, loss, new widows or widowers, people who were very active and who for whatever reason have been struck down with an illness, perhaps a chronic illness, and now they're stuck in a chair. And that's not how they've lived their life. So they're very much looking to live their life through other people's stories.
Yeah.
A safe place is a phrase that comes up an awful lot. So I think it's like we want a book to be exciting, but we also want to trust that it will end up with everything as it should.
Yes. And is there any particular reader that has approached you for expressing how your book might have changed their life?
Literally hundreds of them.
That's amazing.
And a lot of them, obviously, confidentiality and all that, but one lady was in a very damaged relationship and her sister lent her my first book and she found the courage to move on to a much better and happier place for her and her two children. And she credits the book. I'm sure she must have been right on the edge of it when her sister lent her the book. I mean, I don't think the book can take credit for this, but I think perhaps the sister lent her the right book at the right time. Haven't we all had friends who've done that for us, you know?
Yes.
And one incredibly sweet story, which is sad but also joyful because it does have a happy ending. One of my readers was going through chemo. I'm afraid it didn't work out well for her. And I think it was the very first reader I ever lost. Rest in peace, Jan. But her partner, husband, probably, widower, wrote to me with a photograph. And it was my books on her bookshelf. And he'd been tidying all her effects after her passing, as you have to. And there was a post-it note and it said, read these after I'm gone. They'll cheer you up and you'll finally know what I used to laugh so much at.
Oh.
Now, that one had me in tears for several days, as you can probably imagine. He wrote me back about a month later when he'd finished the series and said, she was right, I've never laughed so much. What a gift, thank you very much. So I felt better after that. But yes, I mean, people share very private parts of their lives with authors. I had no idea. That completely took me by surprise.
That's really touching.
I was in floods for days. But I'll tell you the funniest bit. A lot of times my books kind of look like they're for women because they, at one point, were categorized as paranormal women's fiction. So people thought the books were for women rather than having a paranormal woman in it. So I've changed it since, but there's actually a follow-up to that little story about Jan because I don't know if it's husband or partner, it doesn't matter, her male person, wrote me a quite stroppy little email. It was lovely because he was obviously finding himself again. He was moving through his grief. And he said, I don't know why people think these books are for women. They're not for women. I would have read them when she was alive if she'd told me how good they were. I've just put a review on Amazon telling people that. Men should read them too. And it was rather lovely because I could see the change in him over the course of, it was maybe 6 months, from obviously completely devastated, as you know, we are in grief, moving through that process and then coming out the other end and wanting, you know, to put the world right again, it felt like he was coming back to himself. I think anything that helps people move through a difficult time, it doesn't have to be grief, it can be any difficult time, but anything that does that, it's wonderful to see their progress. I mean, my first book came out 4 years ago, and over the 4 years, I've gotten to know some readers really rather better than you might think. But I've also seen the changes in them. That is wonderful.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing that, Lindsay. I think it's incredibly moving. What strikes me more than anything is not just describing someone reading a book, but you're describing someone finding a bridge through one of the most painful experiences of their life. I think that joy that you spread is wonderful, where even her partner, the widower, could actually turn to your books and have a laugh about what Jan was laughing about. And I think that's one of the greatest gifts any writer could hope for to give to their readers. So thank you so much once again, Lindsay, for sharing such valuable insights and stories. We are going to take another commercial break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and today I'm speaking with the amazing Lindsay Day about creativity, storytelling, and following your dreams. Welcome back, Lindsay.
Thank you, Belinda. Still lovely to be here.
It's such a pleasure to have you with us today. What have your readers taught you about the impact your books have had on them, and have any of their stories, apart from the one that you shared before the commercial break, have any of their stories surprised you?
I truly believe they all surprise me. Yeah. We could be here for hours, but suffice it to say, they all surprise me because somehow, and I promise you it wasn't a clever plan, it just happened by accident, but somehow my books have ended up being sold on 6 of the 7 continents, which still blows my mind. Yeah. So a reader from Australia is telling me something very, very different from a reader in Alaska. But at the core of it all, underneath everything, you know, the different facts and the different situations, I would say that probably what they've taught me is that fiction is a great deal more important than people think it is.
In comparison, if the messages are there, and it's a fascinating observation, Lindsay, because we often think of fiction as just entertainment. And I don't mean just entertainment, but entertainment. But what I think you're saying is that the readers think and share that it's much deeper than that. The fact that readers from completely different cultures, backgrounds, and life experiences can all connect with the same story suggests that there are certain experiences that they have that unite us all, maybe. Perhaps that's the real power of fiction. It helps us feel seen and maybe understood better and connected, no matter where we are in the world. And many of your readers talk about finding comfort, that hope, and even healing through your books. But why do you think stories can affect people so deeply, just generally speaking?
I don't know. I think, isn't there an element to all of us that when somebody says once upon a time, somewhere in the back of our mind, we all reach for a mug of hot chocolate and a blanket because we know that someone's going to take us perhaps somewhere more interesting than where we are right now. And I think that there's been a power to stories for millennia, you know, whether that was around the fire or these days with audiobooks, you know. The once upon a time, some it hits some part of our brain, whatever culture, whatever country, whatever place we come from. And we all want to be told a good story. And I think it has to be a good story. But if it is a good story, then I think that it's surprising how much can get woven into it that people think about afterwards.
And it's true. I mean, there's something timeless about storytelling. And long before we even had podcasts or radio or any of those televisions or social media, and people gathered, as you said, to tell stories because stories help us make sense of ourselves. And perhaps that's why a great story stays with us long after we've finished it, not because of the plot alone, but because of what it awakens within us. And I think that's wonderful. And looking back, what advice would you give someone who thinks they have left it too late to follow a dream?
And that would be pretty straightforward. It would be, it isn't. If you're breathing, it's still not too late. I don't believe it's ever too late to become the person you always secretly believed you were, but wondered if you could be that person, perhaps in a different way. I think if readers could take just one thing from my stories, it would be, will you please stop judging yourself and give yourself a chance to do something crazy? What have you got to lose?
I love that. I love that you've shared that, because I think a lot of people do feel stuck. They do feel they haven't got the willpower to do it or the confidence to do it. And to hear it from someone who's doing it, has done it, it's really encouraging as well. As someone who works with people every day, I see how often self-judgment holds people back from living the life they truly want. But your message is a beautiful reminder that growth, reinvention, and new beginnings are possible at any stage of life. And finally, Lindsay, if your readers could take away one message from your books, what would you hope it would be?
Probably exactly what I just said. It's never too late to be the you secretly thought you were when you were a child. Sometimes we have to go back to the little person inside us who has hopes and dreams that got pushed aside for jobs or families or finances or whatever. And I think as we get a little older, not perhaps as old as me, but the older we get, the more chance we have to have organized the rest of our life in such a way that we can free up a little bit of time for us to think about the things we thought we'd like to do when we didn't know, it might be hard to achieve dreams, because it really isn't. It doesn't, you know, guarantee you'll be successful or anything. When I put my first book out, somebody said to me, isn't that hard? Aren't people going to judge your work? And I remember saying, well, yes, of course they will. And if it's, I don't want to swear, but if it's rubbish, presumably very few people will ever find out about it. So I don't have to worry about it, do I? And if it turns out to be good, well, that'd be great. But if I don't put it out there, I will never know. And I think that's what people should take away. If you don't try, you will never know.
And that's a wonderful message, a beautiful way to end the show. Lindsay, thank you so much for joining me today. What I love about your story is that it reminds us that it is never too late to begin again. So many people carry dreams quietly within them, often convincing themselves that the opportunity has passed or that life has taken them in a different direction. And your journey is a wonderful example of what can happen when we choose courage over doubt and curiosity over fear. And through your writing, you've created stories that entertain, inspire, and remind readers that transformation, hope, and second chances are always possible. So thank you for sharing your journey, your insights, and your passion for storytelling with us. So Lindsay, if our listeners wanted to connect with you, where can they find you?
Honestly, Google is my best friend as long as you spell my Christian name right. I spell Lindsay very strangely for a godmother. It's L-I-N-Z-I. And my surname is Day, D-A-Y. You put that into a search engine, it will either take you to my site or to Amazon or to any other place. Google is honestly such a friend to me.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you for that. And thank you to everyone listening to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. If today's conversation has inspired you to revisit a dream, start writing that book, or take the first step towards something you've been putting off, then perhaps it has done exactly what great stories are meant to. I'm Belinda Walia. To close today's show, I'm choosing Somewhere Only We Know by Keane, a beautiful song about finding your place in the world. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.
I walked across an empty land. I knew the pathway like the back of my hand. I felt the earth beneath my feet. Sat by the river and it made me complete. Oh, simple. You gone? I'm getting old and I need something to rely on. So tell me when you're gonna let me in. I'm getting tired and I need somewhere to be.